From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
I have a running joke with today's guest, a joke I suspect thousands of other former customers just like me email him about regularly, too. Every spring cleanup, I come up with more distinctive turquoise plastic labels in my garden that were the signature of Dan Hinckley's former mail-order nursery called Heronswood, and I write to tell him so, or I send him photos of once tiny plants he shipped that are today giants in my yard. Now Dan Hinckley has another treat for us all in the form of his new book called Wyncliffe, the story of the garden he has been making since leaving Heronswood, where he now lives on Puget Sound in Washington. So more in a moment, but first these messages.
Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. Brushwoodnursery.com. Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com.
A story of people, plants, and gardens is the subheading of Dan Hinckley's new book called Wyncliffe, and it is rich with tales of all of the above that have influenced the making of the place. I'm so glad to welcome Dan back to the show today. So hello there, and I'm sorry I keep writing to you about the plastic labels.
Hello, Margaret. And they weren't that tiny of a plant. They were really robust. Now they're just huge. So thank you for that nice introduction. It's nice to talk to you, as always.
Last time we talked for the New York Times thing about hydrangeas,
yes.
And before we get started, I should say that with the transcript of the show on awaytogarden.com, we're going to have a book giveaway, of course, and I know everybody's going to want to enter that. And also, you have a virtual event coming up, September 30th, is that right, September 30th?
Yeah, that's right. It's a joint endeavor between Heronswood and the Northwest Horticultural Society. And so you could go to heronswoodgarden.org, or the Northwest Horticultural Society to get information. That will entail my talk on the development of Wyncliffe, and you also get a book sent to you in the process of signing up. So, yeah, it's a good way to support both Heronswood as well as the greater horticultural community of the Puget Sound area by joining in.
A very rich horticultural area in our country, and Heronswood is now a public garden. Your former home and nursery is now a public garden, and people can, as you said, at heronswoodgarden.org, is that right, or .com?
.org, right.
.org, so, and I will give the link with the transcript, but I just wanted to make sure we'll mention that. So, there's so much in this book, I don't even know where to begin. I mean, it's like a whole big story. And it sort of starts at Heronswood because you learn so many lessons there. We should tell people who don't know, you have traveled the world searching for new and unusual plants and so forth. You're a plant explorer. Part of your life has been that. So it's got a lot in it, this book. But I especially in the beginning, you sort of start with a design chapter. And I wanted to talk about some of the tips in there, because besides making me laugh a lot, some of them, the way you state them, because your writing is quite funny and dry sometimes. But you've learned a lot and you've applied it to this new place. So first give us sort of the backdrop. How long ago did you come to this new place and the transition and so forth that you brought with you to this new palette?
Okay. Well, in a nutshell, I'll try. it was in 2000 when Robert and I had sold this property. We continued to operate it for 5 years, but we were still living in Heronswood. So we began looking for property to get off of the center of this activity. And we wrote letters to friends in the area asking them if they had any knowledge of land for sale in the local vicinity, please let us know. And we received a letter, actually a phone call. The following day after we sent these letters out from friends that had this amazing property in Indianola that we had visited 20 years prior to help them prune a maple that they had there. They asked us to come over and help them prune it. And it was a spectacular piece of land on waterfront looking due south out on the Puget Sound and Mount Rainier and downtown Seattle, the skyline. And so they were ready to leave. When they received this letter, they said, you've thrown us a lifeline. Please, we would love you to have this property. And so in 2000, we started spending weekends at this property in the house that they had, watching the sunrise and the sunset, and as the seasons changed, how the light changed, and getting to know the soil a little bit. So we had about 4 years of me being able to start planting perimeter plantings and throwing things at the soil to see what stuck. It was a brand new adventure. The soil and the light conditions so different from Heronswood. So by the time we built the house in 2003 and moved in 2004, I had already become quite acquainted with the new conditions, but it's still a continual challenge, and so different from Heronswood. But it's a joy too, to be able to leave some mistakes behind and take with you those lessons that you've learned. I realize it's just a real gift to be able to start two gardens and. Mm-hmm. And in our case, to build a garden and a house together, that was a real gift that I know mm-hmm. a lot of people don't get the chance to have. So mm-hmm. I've reveled in every minute of it.
So some of the, you said, sort of throw things at the soil and see what sticks and so forth. And one of the many things I loved reading the book and having known you for a long time and a little bit about the old days and so forth, that even though others would characterize you as a famous gardener and, an expert, all these very high praise kind of things, in the book you talk about, I'm trying to see what's going to work and some stuff's going to die. And, you're very candid about the fact that this is experimental, even at your phase of second big garden, being a plantsman, having, you just said you, the people who owned the house before, they used to have you come prune this particular maple. I think you have a master's degree in your thesis or whatever was the genus Acer maples or something.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You got some training and experience, but you acknowledge that this is an ongoing learning experience and experiment, yes?
Oh, I don't think any of us that call ourselves true gardeners can say, hey, we finally have mastered this. I mean, there are some people out there that really have, perfected the art of growing maybe a genus or two of plants that are more difficult to grow. But I would think any of us that are honest with ourselves know that, we're still going to plant plants too closely. How ridiculous it is to take a 4-inch pot and actually plant it, 8 feet from another 4-inch pot. It's like, that's the most ridiculous looking thing I've ever seen in my life. Of course I'm going to plant it 3 feet apart and regret it, in 3 years' time. So these are the things that I continually struggle with, this want of density of planting and at the same time realizing that I'm making a mistake in the process of planting, trying to, force square pegs through round holes, all of those things that we were doing as younger gardeners, I admit readily to doing again on another piece of property. But I think that ultimately you do this long enough and you begin to understand some of those wide principles of what makes a successful successful garden work. Mm-hmm. And I think those are the things that I took with me to Wincliffe. continue to try to work within those principles to make a garden that's satisfying to me.
So one anecdote you have in the book, you talk about there was a conifer maybe that was in a prominent place that the previous owners had cultivated and loved, and I think it was a juniper. And you knew you wanted to use the real estate for something else, I think, but it was a big deal and a big change. And you have this anecdote about making the decision to finally just go ahead and remove it, and then also reminding yourself, I think you'd say something like, beware the meaningless blob. Like, don't just go out and buy one big thing to stick in there because the space suddenly looks so empty. But you have to go with those 4-inch pots if you want to make a complex and exciting planting for the future. So maybe you could talk about like the sort of letting go of something that's there and the starting over a little bit.
Yeah. That was a big tam juniper, and which is a pretty boring plant for us in the Northwest, but it was doing a lot of it was providing a lot of utility in that space. It was just wasted real estate. And so when I finally said, it's time to go, there I am left with, a pretty sizable chunk of land in full sun, and it looks so raw and barren, and all of us as gardeners have been there. It's like, oh God, it was looking reasonable. Now I destroyed it, and I want to go out. I just want to fix it right away. And so our immediate response is to go out and buy some big plants at a nursery that are just going to become that same meaningless space. And instead, what I'm suggesting that we do is to, try a bunch of smaller plants that you can coax along to see what is really going to fit into that space.
Yes.
Culturally, and try to work in textures and seasonality and a bit of fragrance, if that's what it is, or a little movement in our case, because we're perpetually buffeted by winds. So, yeah, I think that's we're seduced continually by large plants in nurseries that immediacy effect. And what I'm suggesting is slow down, plant things that you really want to try, which oftentimes you have to buy in mail order through mail order. So they're pretty small plants, but they're going to be big relatively soon, and to enjoy that process of raising something small and filling that space in will ultimately be richer fabric.
I loved also the one lesson you said you brought from Heronswood. You said looking back at it, some of the original beds, the areas that they were flat as a flounder, and you learned looking at them, you said, I'm not doing that again. So talk a little bit about that, non-flat as a flounder. Horticulture.
Yeah, and that's another thing, the big lesson that I learned at Heronswood is that you don't really think about the upper atmosphere of your garden. You're taller than the plantings, so you don't want to look down on them, but it's that interruption of space by planting something that's a little taller, a little bit more narrow, adjacent to things that are lower, and perhaps a little bit more broad, that really excite the eyes, at least in my case. I will say that the risk of writing a book about how to garden is you can easily come across by sounding like you've mastered it and this is the way you have to garden, and that's not what I'm trying to say. But the lesson I've learned is that if I can interrupt a planting with something that's taller and take advantage of that upper atmosphere and frame a few views in the distance with it, it just excites your eye a bit more as you go across it, rather than it's just continual flat horizontal space.
Mm. Another one in the design chapter that I loved is, and you cite both two venerable English plants people, Christopher Lloyd and Graham Stewart Thomas, you said one of them said it sort of take care of winter and the remainder of the seasons will take care of themselves. So explain what that insight about, you just mentioned seasonality as well.
Yeah, it was Christopher Lloyd that said that, I think. He told me that or wrote it. And it is so true. If, you know, just by default, we end up with things that do their performances in the spring and summer. It's, you know, things are going to migrate into your gardens that are doing that, doing their thing during the high season of gardening. But if you can deliberately select framework or even understory plantings that are going to do something during late fall, whether that be good autumn color, or in the wintertime, whether it be evergreen foliage from a conifer, broadleaf evergreen, whether it be fruit that holds on during the winter, or winter flowering shrubs and trees such as witch hazels that do as well for you as they do for us. You are going to span the season of interest in your garden. And then if you can do that, if you can think about those seasons, as I've already said, the plants that will ultimately migrate into the garden will take care of the April through September.
Right. And you remind us, and this, you know, maybe it should seem obvious, but again, we all shop in, you know, here it's April, May into early June. You know, we all shop in the time that is, quote, peak spring in our areas. And so we end up with a lot of spring things. And you say, like, ration your plant budget, you know, to don't spend it all on the spring and visit gardens and nurseries in all the seasons. I mean, this is a really important time right now to visit gardens, because what looks good now after a tough summer in so many regions, right? I mean,
so true. So true. You know, this is the time when people are getting tired of their gardens because the leaves are decrepit, the flowers are gone, but there are a lot of things right now that are really picking up the pace. So if you're out there right now visiting gardens or garden centers and looking at what's shining, this is the time to buy, and also October, January. Get into garden centers in January and February and say, gosh, that bark on that plant is so beautiful right now. That's what I need to hold this part of the garden together during the off season.
Right, right. You also talk about a couple of other things in the design chapter, like balance and repetition, for instance. You kind of reminded me, and I sometimes remember to say it when I'm lecturing or whatever, you know, the repetition thing, and that can be of color, of shapes, of individual plants, so many different things, repetition. Want to talk about that at Wincliffe, some examples at Wincliffe?
Sure, yeah. And you know, to try to convey repetition and balance in a sentence that sounds like I know how to communicate in English is really difficult. Because it's really something you feel more than can readily identify and talk about. But just by standing in your garden and sort of letting your eyes glaze over, you can begin to feel that sense of movement from one part of your garden to the other through, whether it be color in a foliage in the springtime, or summer color in the case at Wincliffe, it's, you know, agapanthus. So I have a lot of agapanthus planted throughout the bluff, the front part of the garden. And when they're in blossom, it's fantastic. But it's at that point when you can just look at the plantings and think, you know, there's way too much weight on this part of the garden versus the upper part. It's when I make my decisions as to what I'm going to do in the coming winter months when I'm in there eradicating or adding. It's those lessons I've learned just by staring into the garden at this time of the year, or at any time really, to look at those to look at how the garden guides my own eyes from one place to the other.
Mm.
I don't know. Does that make any sense?
That makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. No, of course it does. And you're right. I mean, when we see the spot, like the Agapanthus example, you know, we see that but then we look elsewhere and that same sense of satisfaction isn't happening. I mean, there's a lesson in it. There's a joy in looking at it, but there's also the lesson in it. So
always a lesson that we have to remember, write down and say, you know, this is what I'm going to do in the future.
Yeah.
And
so as I said in the introduction, the subheading of the book is A Story of People, Plants, and Gardens. And it was very interesting to see you. There's one whole chapter in the back where you mentioned people, different people who have inspired you, who you've traveled and done plant explorations with, whose work you've read, et cetera, et cetera. You talk about them throughout the book. But in the back chapter, there's more direct sort of homage to some of them. And it's very interesting for me to see you shout out other people because, of course, I think of you in that group. And I think a lot of gardeners who have benefited from the plants you've brought to us and the work you've done, and so forth. But you talk about, because a lot of us haven't really traveled beyond the garden center or maybe the botanical garden or some neighbor or nearby garden. We haven't seen the world of plants in the same way that you and these other people. So I just wondered if we could just shout out a couple of them. But you had J.C. Ralston, for example. I think the chapter begins with him. Just a little quick, you know.
Yeah, nod. You know, he was my hero. And we all have our own heroes through life. Fortunately for me, I get to have those people surround me still in the garden, continuing to grow. So it doesn't. It's not as if I have a memento from them stuck away on my bookshelf that I pick up once every 3 years and think of him fondly or her fondly. But every time I walk through my garden, it's this flood of memories of different people. And JC was so instrumental and so sharing in so many plants. I mean, it was his goal in life to get people to understand the breadth of the world of plants and the diversity that was there, and to be experimental in growing different things. And so he shared so much with me that ended up really building Heronswood. And so I couldn't possibly not have him growing at Wincliffe. So there are certain plants that he gave me that came into the collection just so he would be there. And there's not truly a moment that I go by any of those plants, leaving the garden in the morning or coming home at night, that I don't see him. And he and many other people just flip a switch, and there they are standing, talking to me about those plants.
There's an arboretum grateful. Named for him, yes?
Yes, and he has the J.C. Ralston Arboretum now in Raleigh. He died much, much too young in life,
yes.
Early 50s in a car accident. But, interestingly enough, Tony Avent, who's a disciple of J.C., is here in my garden today at Heronswood for a visit.
Oh.
So, and he wanted to extend his
big
hello
the first
to
time,
you.
The first time I went to that arboretum years and years and years ago, and he was there. It was the first time I ever met the genus Cephalotaxus, the plum yews.
Uh-huh.
And he had a collection of them, and some were tall and columnar and some were lower. And I kind of got what you just said, that, you know, the breadth, that he wanted us to see the breadth of some, even within one genus. So yes, 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 yes. So we just have like a minute left, barely a minute. And I just want to remind people, not just about the book, but You're going to be doing this live event on the 30th that they can, I don't know if there's a recording then afterward that they can also re-listen
yes,
to.
Yes, they
we'll
can. Yeah.
So that's great. So if it's not a good time for them,
they can watch it, I think, for 2 weeks or something like that.
Fantastic. Fantastic. And so you're going to go out and hang out with Tony and spend a wonderful day, and I'm jealous in your beautiful Wycliffe.
Well, you know what, Margaret, interestingly enough, there's lots of plants at Heronswood that bring you into focus as well. You know, from conversations we've had in the past or plants that we've admired together. So that's really one of the most extraordinary things about gardening is that
I totally agree.
Your friends can come alive, and you do oftentimes at Heronswood. So.
Oh, thank you. And I hope I'll talk to you again soon. Thanks, Dan, for making time.
Thank you, Margaret.
Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com. Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. BrushwoodNursery.com.
And thanks to all of you for tuning in, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or iTunes or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com. or on Facebook and Instagram as @AwayToGarden. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.